Sergeant in Arms, hoist the colors.
Oh, that's right, we're not at the Legion.
Mom, I was going to have you post the colors, but we're not at the Legion convention. I forgot. We're at an early meeting. We open this meeting as our early meeting for a moment of silent meditation. You should have been aware.
My name is John T. and I'm an alcoholic. For anybody that's new, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. For anybody that's new, this is a little different type of a meeting. This is an anniversary of a group. And this group is, I don't know whether it's 38 or 39. Tom is here. How much, Tom? 38, yeah. Okay. Four of us started this group, and two of us are still alive. Tom is there. The Salt and Pepper Twins. Yeah. It's amazing that I survived. Tom was the first pigeon I had out of the Worcester County Jail, and of course he was in there when they had the buckets. They didn't have toilets, and so I had to deal with him for a while in the meetings. And there was, in the town of Clinton in those days, in the AA, there was no sanitary codes, and so he was so jumpy, his wife would fix up a lunch for him, and he was on the run to go to an AA meeting, and sometimes we'd go to Hartford or up into Portsmouth, New Hampshire. 495 wasn't even open, and when I'd go to clean the car the next day, Tom would have all kinds of plates underneath the seat. But we survived. So we're here all these years, and the group is still going, one day at a time, one week at a time, and it proves that Alcoholics Anonymous really does work. And you've got to work at it. And I think the evidence is all around us that if you play with fire and don't accept the first three steps of this program, a lot of people just end up in trouble. And in your prayers tonight, remember Mike from the Marlboro, South Pro area that passed away, and Freddie that we went to his service tonight. He used to sit here. Mike used to sit over there with Rosalie. And another little quiet woman will be buried tomorrow at St. Anne's in Leominster. Ruthie used to sit in that corner there. All fine members of Alcoholics Anonymous. All people that stayed sober one day at a time. So we remember them in our closing prayer tonight. Tonight we've gone far and wide to pick up speakers. Some people go up into Skowhegan, Maine, and Canada and all that and bring them down, but the budget is very tight here. Otto and Janet watch that. In fact, they've been thinking of bringing in auditors to check them books. Shortly after Otto got the car, the book for the group here, he got a new car. You know, that happens in the a new car, especially if you got a big attendance like the Hudson Second Chance Group. Ernie and Sally watched them close. Sally has installed hidden cameras over Hudson. They've been watching Frankie for a long time. Frankie's limit is two hot dogs every Monday night. And so the group is watching him. If he takes that third one, he's in trouble. For the opening speaker tonight, we've gone way over into the Norbury group, and we've got Donna going to speak.
Hi, Hi, I'm Donna, an alcoholic. And I'd like to congratulate the Clinton Group on their 38th, 39th, whatever it is, anniversary. When I first started coming in, I used to come to this meeting every Friday night. I was dragged by actually someone else who lived in Worcester. And she wanted to make sure that I got my meetings in. And I haven't been here for like 20 years. It's been a long time since I've been here. But it's still the same as I remember it, actually. Anyway, when Jude asked me to speak, she said to me, she said, do you speak at AA anniversaries? And I said, I don't know. I've never been asked. And so now I can say, yeah, I guess I do. But I've been asking for a lot of help today. And I said to my sponsor last night, I said, you know, I've been over to a million anniversaries, but I'm supposed to just tell my story, right? Like I'm supposed to tell somebody else's story, you know? But anyway, I came from an alcoholic home. And my father actually is sober now. He's sober almost 8 years. And back then, though, it was a crazy place to live and grow up. And I believe I was an alcoholic from when I was born. You know, I picked up a drink and I was off and running. And so I think I was just an alcoholic waiting to happen. And I think I was like 12, more than 12 years old when I had Lake Ripple. It was a Friday night and we all got together and had our swings with Lake Ripple. And I got a little bit of a buzz. And I thought, geez, this stuff is great, you know. And it wasn't too long after that I was, you know, trying a little bit of this and a little bit of that and doing a few pills and smoking pot and doing whatever. And basically what I realized was that I wanted to find this high that I found when I first had a drink. And, you know, what I realize now is that by the time I was 16, I was a full-blown alcoholic, and I didn't even realize it, you know. I always, back then you had to be 18 to get into the bars, and I always looked older for my age than I was, so it was at 15, 16 I could get into bars, you know. I remember when I turned 18, it was great because I called the waitress over that I'd known for 2 or 3 years, and I showed her my license, you know, and she couldn't believe that I just turned 18. But anyway, you know, I hung around with my brother and his friends, and I hung around with an older crew and the folks that drank, and I was the first one to get to a party and usually the first one to get drunk and pass out. And then when people were getting ready to go, I'd be waking up and I would want to keep going, you know. And I've never understood what a social drinker is. You know, I never, ever, 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 ever drank to have a drink, you know, or to relax. I mean, I had a drink. I wanted to get drunk. You know, if I was drinking, I was getting drunk. That's all there was to it. And even to this day, you know, when I first came in and I was first getting sober, I used to be really pissed at the people that couldn't drink and I couldn't. And so I'd sit in a restaurant, and, you know, and I'd see people with these little drinks, you know. And I had never been a little drink in my life. I mean, I don't know why anybody would bother, you know. And but then they sip them, you know, and it would just make me crazy. You know, I'd want to go over, pull their gear back, and say, drink it, you know. And now I just kind of laugh. I mean, thank God I don't get angry at all these people that can drink now. But it was torture watching people do that, you know. Anyway, you know, my drunk log really isn't any different from most other people's. You know, I ended up with people in places doing things I shouldn't have done, you know, and I was a protected drunk. I guess I had my license but no pass, so everybody else always drove and I got to pass out, and you know, and I didn't have to worry about, you know, drinking and driving. So but once I did get my license, thank God I didn't drive too long while I was drinking, because I came close to a few accidents. And I don't know what would have happened had I been, you know, drinking and driving for quite some time. I was always, you know, even as a kid, I can remember, like, just being, like, you know, if life was too hard to manage, I would kind of go, well, I can always kill myself. You know, like, I always had that as an out, you know. And I guess that's not normal, but, you know, I just kind of thought like that. And then I was like 18 when I came to my first AA meeting, and I went to Holy Cross on a Friday night, and there was tons of people. And there was this, so I went into this room, and there was this old lady, well, she looked old, and I was like only 18, so they all looked old, but, and everybody in the room is talking about losing their husband and their car and their house and their kids, and I mean, and I'm a Catholic, and so when I went home that night, you know, I didn't know about getting on your knees and all that stuff. So I went home that night. I remember getting on my knees, though, and I prayed for these poor people in this room because I felt so bad for all these people that were losing all these things, you know. And little did I know that I was one of those people that, you know, was going to be there at some point. But I wasn't ready, you know. I went to a meeting. I was urged to go strongly by a friend, and I was nowhere near ready to admit, except do anything about being an alcoholic. When I first came in, I guess I wanted to learn how to drink and either not get depressed or drink and not get drunk or drink and do something. I'm not quite sure, but there was never a thought of not drinking. That never entered the picture. And I think I try to find that way, I guess. You know, when I buy a six-pack of beer and I drink before, I drink three cans before and a few cans after, and I went to a few meetings here and there, but, you know, I wasn't hearing anything. Who was I talking to anybody? But, you know, I would come once in a while, and that was it. And I wasn't serious about it at all. And then I went to a meeting at Chestnut Street, and I bumped into Irene D. And God love her. You know, she was a great, great inspiration to me. And she comes to me one night. Now, I was not going to ask anybody to be a sponsor. Okay, I didn't do that. And she came over to me and said, "You need a sponsor?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "I'm it." And I said, "Okay." I mean, there was like no way that I was going to say no to Irene, you know. And that began, that was like kind of like a six-month journey. But I still wasn't, you know, ready. I wasn't really here thinking I belonged here 100%. And I remember saying to Irene one day, I said, "You know, I really might not be an alcoholic. You know, there is, you know, a little bit of doubt left." And she said, "Well, let me tell you, why don't we do this? Why don't you go the next 90 days and not have a drink? And if after 90 days you don't have a problem doing that, then feel free to go." And I thought, this is great. This is fantastic. So she was at Catholic Charities then. So I walked out of Catholic Charities, walked downstairs. I don't even think I had reached my car when I realized that she had just asked me not to drink all summer. Everybody drinks in the summer. So we couldn't do this 90 days, you know. And that was, you know, what's crazy is that the thinking that I still have sometimes, I think it makes sense, you know, when I believe my thoughts sometimes, which can be scary. But, you know, back then I really didn't have it together and I was really in denial. And so I, again, was on my merry way and drinking, and I was sharing outside before the meeting that somebody said to me, "Well, with Irene as a sponsor, you didn't drink." I'm like, "Yeah, I did," you know. And I remember one night calling her, it was like 1:30 in the morning, and I'd been drinking. And she answered the phone, and she said, she just pictured her face, although I didn't see her, I was on the phone. But she said, "Do you have any more?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "I'll wait." And so I did. I trotted up the stairs, and I dumped the rest of the bottle, and I trotted back down and told her it was all gone, you know. And, but, you know, she was wonderful. She was absolutely the best thing that ever happened to me, you know. I needed someone who was not going to take my role, because I was screwing around, you know what I mean? I wasn't taking this seriously. I didn't really think I was going to die. I was only 19 by then, and, you know. I was going to meetings, and I drank more or less my first year in AA. My husband and I joke around about this a lot, because I came into AA before him, but he came in and got sober. So in the year that I was drinking, now he got sober, so he actually has like 6 months, 8 months, whatever, as long as than me, so even though I was here first. But anyway, I lost my train of thought. What was that? I don't know. I would put, my first year, I would put like 2 to 3 weeks together. And I couldn't put any more than that together, you know. And again, I was angry. I was pissed that I was an alcoholic. I wanted to be able to drink, you know. And finally in like April of 1980, I had to this day what I hope was my last drink. And at that time, no, I'm sorry. Forget that. That's not true. In July of 1980. In April of 1980, I had gone to the doctors because I was having a lot of pain in my stomach. And she told me I had an enlarged liver and that if I continued to drink, I would die. And I remember walking out of her office that day and thinking, well, this is great because now I don't have to go to AA anymore. I'll just think about what the doctor says and I won't drink. You know, so it's that simple. And that lasted all of maybe 3 days. I'm not really sure. And I continued to drink. And that last few months of my drinking was, thought I was in grayouts and blackouts. I only remember one blackout. Now, I could have had more, but I just don't remember it. But I was at a movie in the drive-in theater. I remember I got there, and the beginning of the movie, and then the next thing I remember was the end of the movie, and I was in the bathroom with blood all over my foot. I don't know what happened in that 3 hours, stand, 4 hours, you know, whatever it was, but that's the only blackout that I recall at this time, to this day. But, you know, my drinking, I was just going downhill, you know. I mean, it would take that much and I could pass out, and then the next time I would try to get drunk and I couldn't, you know. And I really was, I was suicidal, I was a nut. And I was going to meetings, I was still drinking. Frank T. from Westboro, God love him, he'd always come over to me on Wednesday nights and say, how long you got? And sometimes it was like, you know, 3 minutes, you know. And he'd always say, just sit down in front, you know. And what was wonderful was that I wasn't required to be, I mean, I wasn't a pain in the neck drunk, but it wasn't like a requirement that I had to be sober to sit at the meeting. And it just was like, you know, that kind of blew my mind. Anyway, in July of 1980, I did have, to this day, my last drink, and I don't know why. I don't know why it was my last drink. It wasn't like I had this horrific drunk where, you know, there's much to tell about it, because there wasn't anything to tell about it. But I always thought that my last drink would be like this thing you'd write a novel about and everybody would read about it or something, you know. And I couldn't even get drunk that night, you know. And I wanted to, you know. I basically, at the end of my drinking, I just wanted to be blotto 24 hours a day, because I couldn't stand, you know. I was like afraid to live, afraid to die, and I didn't know where my place was, you know. And I was on my knees that night. I threw away so much booze in trying to quit that I was like, I'm not throwing this away. So I'm on my knees because of my stomach hurts so much. I wasn't asking for help. And I got, you know, I'm turning like this, you know, and I finished the bottle. I finished it. I wasn't throwing it away. And I went to a meeting that night, and I went to meetings every night, and I wanted to drink, you know, I really wanted to drink, and I guess I got some sort of acceptance or something, but I was still, I mean, I would walk into Carol and Billy's house and go, come on, you mean, I'm sick of going to these meetings, you know, and they'd say, just come with us, come on, just come to a meeting, you know, and I was nuts, I mean, I hated coming to meetings. I was not one of those people that felt like I belonged and that I was home and it was, like, wonderful coming here, you know. I hated being in AA. I didn't know how to talk to people. And I was saying how when Carol used to bring me here on Friday nights, you know, she'd be there talking to everybody, you know, and I wouldn't talk to anybody. And so I'd be, like, waiting for the meeting to start so people would just, like, I wouldn't have to feel uncomfortable not talking to people, you know. And I just kept coming, you know. I got on my knees every day. I switched a few sponsors here and there. And I went to meetings, and I couldn't do much more than just, like, stay sober. And I was really, you know, like, all of a sudden, now I guess I was 20. I got sober when I was 20. And so they told me that I was an adult. And I was supposed to be able to, you know, think like one and act like one. And I didn't know how to feel anything. I didn't know how to feel happy, sad, mad, glad, whatever, without something in my body, you know. So this was a whole new thing for me. And I didn't do real well with it, actually. I was almost like more suicidal my first 3 or 4 years sober because, you know. And I was really a nut. And I ended up in Beach Hill. I was about 2.5 years sober. Well, not even quite 2 years. A little over 2 years. And I got to the point where I was either going to kill myself or drink. I mean, I just, you know, was a nut. So I ended up at Beach Hill for like 21 days, and it wasn't the 21-day cure-all by any means, but what it did was it kind of gave me, I loved being on the hill. It was wonderful. You know, I kind of felt like I was away from the world, you know, and that's what I kind of needed for a little while, I guess. But it put me in touch with myself, and I remember the day before I was leaving, I was telling somebody, one of the counselors, how scared I was to be going home, and, you know, and he suggested that I go to discussion meetings. And pretty much at that point, I was just going to a lot of open meetings. I would go to Chestnut Street. But, you know, I read about pride and humility and all these things, but I didn't know what any of those meant. You know, and I would just say what everybody else said, you know, because I wanted to fit in, you know, but I had no clue, you know. And so when I got out of Beach Hill and I did start going to discussion meetings, it was the best thing I ever did because up until that time, you know, I mean, open meetings used to be the size of like this. This was like how it used to always be, you know. And you can hide, you know, with all these people. And, you know, I mean, if you're not there, not everybody's going to miss you, and, you know. But in a discussion meeting, you know, you've got, back then, there were like, you know, five, six, seven people. And these are people that that I had been going to meetings with for quite some time. And it was so hard for me to talk in front of them. And if there's one thing that I would tell, you know, the newcomer or someone who's here who doesn't talk to people, is to like, you gotta do that. You know, I paid a high price for not doing that. And I worked real hard at that today, at trying to be honest and open, because I did. I pay a real heavy price for that. And I guess, you know, maybe that's the way I had to do it, you know. I mean, I did the best I could, you know. But I had such a hard time opening my mouth. And to this day, when I see a newcomer who, like, opens their mouth and shares in a meeting, I'm like, you know, in awe, because I couldn't do it. It took me like 3 years here to do that, you know. Anyway, you know, I came close to, I was going to meetings, I was talking to my sponsor, you know. I still had, though, some kind of anger, resentment, whatever have you. And I remember one day calling my sponsor. I was also very much a people pleaser, and so I called him one day. I decided I was drinking. This was like January of, I don't know, 23, whatever it was. And I called her and told her that, you know, I'd gone to like a half a meeting that week, and told her that I wanted to drink. And she said to me, you know, I want you to get on your knees and beg God for help. So we hung up the phone, and because I wanted to be able to tell her that I did what she told me and it didn't work, so I, you know, kind of swooped down, and I planned on just kind of doing a swoop, you know, and running out the door. And you know, I was on my knees for like 20 minutes in tears. I don't know what happened. You know, I say it's the grace of God. I just know that something hit me that day, you know, and that a willingness came to me that I hadn't had before. And I remember the next day that I had the willingness to do whatever it was she told me to do. It didn't matter, you know. And for me, that's really kind of where my sobriety started. I kind of had like this drunk time, this dry time, and then I had some sober time, you know. And that's where, you know, that's kind of where my life began. You know, I've always been very active in AA, and I believe, you know, to this day, I mean, that I need to stay active in AA. I belonged to a number of different groups over the years. I started with Millbury, went to the Westboro Wednesday night, you know, and ended up Main Street in Worcester for a while, and now I'm back at Millbury again, you know, and it's wonderful, you know. And I think, you know, when I first, I think a lot of us, I know speaking for myself, I thought that once I got sober, you know, all these wonderful, wonderful things should happen, you know, and that bad things shouldn't happen. And I was confused as hell about the steps, I gotta tell you. I didn't get it. I remember the day I realized that step three meant whether good or bad things happen, you turn it over to God. Now, I thought it was just like good things and bad things happen, I had to take care of it myself, you know. And my understanding of the steps was, you know, insane. I mean, I didn't know from Adam what I was supposed to do, you know. And I just had to keep coming and keep listening. And in time, things started to make sense, you know. Sobriety has been very good to me, you know. I wouldn't be alive without AA, you know. I am coming up on 22 years in July, and I can't even imagine where my life would be, you know. I've done a lot of things. I got married in AA, and I'm not saying this just because he's in the audience, I promise, but you know, I really am. And we have a wonderful, wonderful marriage, you know, and we're married now, my daughter was born in 92. That's how I figure things out, you know. But we started going, we dated. Our first date was April 14th of 1990. So we got married a year later to the exact day. You know, we're such alfies. And we wouldn't tell anybody. I think at 6 months we said, because we got engaged around 3 months, but we couldn't tell anybody because you're not supposed to get engaged in 3 months, you know. So we waited until about 6 months, and then we decided that now it was okay to tell people that we were engaged, you know. So, and but we both fought like that. So, you know, we have 2 kids. They're absolutely wonderful. You know, I am really happy, you know, being married and having kids. I mean, I never thought that someone could love me or that I could love someone as much as I do. You know, and I'm very blessed that I work my program and he works his. It wouldn't work if we didn't continue, both go to meetings, both work our program. I'm really grateful because I hear a lot of married couples talk about, you know, they do a lot of complaining and this one doesn't go and that one doesn't go. And you know, we both know where we need to be, you know. And I let him know when he needs some meeting. I'm the first one to tell him. And sobriety has its trials and its, you know, I mean, it's life. You know, I really thought it was supposed to be different when I stopped drinking. And what is different is that I can walk through a lot of this stuff now. I mean, I couldn't have walked through it before. And I am a good mother, you know, and I am a good wife. And I'm a good daughter. And I couldn't be those things before, you know. We have 2 kids. Our son is, he'll be 8 in November, and he's autistic. And he is a real joy, you know. And but I think it's this program and Charlie and I being able to talk about, you know, our frustrations and early when he was first born and well, he was like 18 months when he was diagnosed, but you know, and all the stuff that you go through, you know, the loss and the anger and the fear and, you know, what the hell are we going to do? And, you know, and even at times now, thank God we can talk to each other, you know. Because, I mean, both of us think about what's going to happen when he gets older, you know, and we think, well, we're not there yet. I don't want to go there yet, so let's just do today, you know. And it's good that we can talk like that. And, you know, and when Charlie starts to get a little bit nutsy, then I can pull him back and vice versa, you know. You know, and it takes a lot of work with him, you know, and but the one thing I was saying last week at a gratitude meeting that, you know, I think because of, you know, Matthew was like 4 and a half, I believe, before he was the first time he said mama on his own. And you know, I think watching his little steps, which are major steps, major, major things, you know, for him to all of a sudden know what a color is and keep that in his head is like major, you know, and it's enabled us to see the little things, you know, the things that I might have taken for granted. And so everything, every time he tries a new food, you know, I mean, it's major, you know. And he is a joy. He is an absolute joy, you know. But again, you know, I think without AA, we wouldn't be able to do this, you know. You know, in sobriety, I always kind of thought to myself, you know, is there anything that could really ever make me, you know, pick up a drink? And I know that it's not like it has to be a big thing. It could be anything, you know. But when I was 17 years sober, my daughter, who was 5 at the time, was raped. And it was, you know, and again, thank God for this program, you know. And it was the hardest thing that I've ever, ever, ever had to go through in sobriety. And I did, you know, I came to meetings. I talked to a few people. I kind of got into my own little shell there for a while and wouldn't talk to people. But I wanted to drink, not because I wanted to drink, but because I wanted the feelings to go away. You know, I didn't know how to deal with these things. I mean, the rage I felt was, you know, this was all a whole new thing for me, you know. And, you know, and again, you know, thank God Charlie and I could just talk to each other and, you know, and joke around at times too, I guess. We decided that, you know, we could think about killing the person that had done this, but if we were on our way to his house, that we better tell somebody. And, you know, so keeping tabs on each other that way. But, you know, and I'll tell you, it was a long process. And it's funny because I, you know, I had a real tough time for that 3.5 years. You know, I'm also a food addict. My food was way, my God, everything was all over the place with all this stuff. And I had a resentment that I couldn't let go, and I would, you know, I'd say, I know I'm angry, I know it, and I just couldn't let go. And thank God I kept coming, because finally, it's almost a year ago now, I guess, that I don't know why I reached the point finally this one day where I knew. Now, I never made a God bag. I've heard about God bags since before I even stopped drinking, you know what I mean, when I was coming around here. And I just thought I would always do it in my head, you know. So I actually did a physical God bag this time, and I wrote down all the resentments that I had around this whole thing, you know, from the lawyers and the police, everything, you know. And I had like 22 resentments, I'm counting them as I was putting them in the bag, you know. And, but what a release I got, you know, and my resentments, you know, left, you know, now. There's still some feelings, but there's no more resentments. You know, it's like, geez, it took me 21 years to make a God bag, you know. I mean, but it works, you know, it really works. And again, you know, I believe, you know, I've seen so many people go out and drink, and I don't care if they've had 10, 15, 20 years of sobriety, you know. I know that if I stop coming to meetings, I'm drinking. There is no doubt in my mind, because I won't make it. I get nuts when I'm coming here. Yeah, I wonder why. But, you know, but I mean, so if I don't come, you know, I'll never make it, you know, and I can't say that enough. You know, I get really kind of frustrated at times with, and I have to focus on me, but, you know, everybody in my group doesn't do exactly what I want them to do, so I get kind of frustrated, but, you know, but, I mean, I am the bookkeeper for Millbury, you know, and I know I need to have a job. See, my thinking will make me say, oh, Saturday night, I'd rather stay home and watch whatever I want on TV on Saturday night, you know, and so if I have a job, if I have a commitment, then I know that I have to show up and go there, you know, because my disease is still out there wanting to drink. I know that for a fact, you know, and that's why I stay close to AA, you know. I mean, my daughter, her, she's more at the Saturday night meeting more than half the members, you know, and she loves AA people. She thinks they're wonderful, you know, and I'm glad of that, you know. I thank you for asking me to speak tonight. I'm glad that I'm just about finished and that Ralph has to come up next. And but I love AA. You know, it took a long time for me to feel that way. But if you're coming back, you know, put your hand up. Talk to somebody. Don't leave here tonight without a phone number. Thanks.
Thank you, Don. Wasn't you fortunate to get back with Irene? When I think of Irene, she was perhaps the first woman member of the Clinton Shamrock Group when the Shamrock Group was meeting at the Old Star Theater on the second floor with the VFW. And Irene would have, when the girls started coming in, all sit together. And Carol is here with you tonight from Millbury also. And she warned Carol about getting tied up with the Clinton guys. So of course, she married Bobby. And it was election night. And Tommy was a police officer. And Willie is there, too. Willie was a sergeant in the police department at that time. And they had police cruisers that were, they were blue and pink, I think. Two colored. And Tommy arrived over at my house. It was election night with that bright colored police car. And he said to me, "You're going to get a visitor." And I says, "Who the heck is coming tonight? I don't want anybody bothering me election night." He says, "Bobby is coming." So Bobby arrived over and he said to me, "I'm going to get married." I said, "What? How the hell are you going to get married? You can't even get out of bed." But he married Carol, and they've had a successful marriage, and there are a lot of good marriages in AA and a lot of good people because of people that planted the seed like Irene. And you often wonder how many lives they've touched, and now you've heard Donna, and she's gone on and stayed active in this program and helped other people to learn how to stay sober one day at a time. So now I guess we're going to have the raffle. We've written down a lot of things here. And Otto's got tickets there. I don't know how many books he's going to raffle off. Maybe a trip to Ireland or something. I don't know.
So you'll have a lot of time.